It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. You remember NASA's Kepler mission? That's the spacecraft whose job it is to peek out at the far reaches of space in the hopes of finding potentially habitable planets. And it was nearly a year ago that we heard bad news about the Kepler spacecraft. A pointing system failure had ended the main planet-hunting mission of Kepler. Then, just days ago, a stunning success. The announcement by NASA of a new bounty of planets revealed by Kepler. They're called exoplanets. They're outside of our solar system. And it was the largest single-day haul of exoplanets since the first such planet was discovered. And that was way back in 1995, less than 20 years ago. And now we have a total of over 1,700 recognized planets outside of our solar system. Joining me to talk about the latest findings, an astronomer who's been combing through the vast amounts of data from Kepler. He's affiliated with the project. Steve Kowaler is with us. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Ben. Good to see you again.
Good to talk with you. We remind our listeners, you're an astrophysics professor in the astronomy program in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Iowa State University. How much did this discovery a few days ago boost the number of verified planets?
Well, you gave some of those numbers right away there. Over 700 new planets were formally announced on last Wednesday, and that brought the number up by roughly 70%, from 1,000 to 1,700. These planets weren't just discovered 2 days ago or last week. The work that led to their discovery has taken years. So the announcement last week was just that, an announcement, the culmination of a lot of hard work by a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. So what's been happening, this is actually data from a few years ago?
Well, it's data that were accumulated over the four-year lifetime of Kepler during its primary mission, the mission that ended, as you mentioned, last May, unfortunately, when its second reaction wheel pooped out. But the data are so vast and so voluminous that it's been taking most of this past year to finish going through all those data. And in the process, these 700-plus planets were discovered.
What does that mean, going through this data?
Good question. When Kepler looks for planets, it's actually looking at the stars and trying to see the diminution, is that a word? The drop in the light from the star caused by the planet crossing in front of it. And that's a very, very tiny effect. If the Earth crossed in front of the sun and you observed it from far away, that would be a drop in the light from the sun of one part in 100,000. So it's a really, really tiny effect. And so when you look for planets around other stars using the Kepler data, you're looking for a tiny drop in the light for a few hours, and then a return back to the normal light level. And as you might imagine, that's really extremely difficult. Computers can do most of that search, but it does take a hands-on culling of the data after the computer has been through it to try and finally come up with the properties of the planets.
With that small amount of light difference that you're measuring or trying to identify, how can you ever tell anything about the character of these planets?
Well, probably the most important character of the planets is their existence, okay? So finding them is enormously important. Beyond that, though, you can get a lot of other information out by how much the light drops. A big planet will drop the light more than a small planet, so the degree to which the planet takes the light away from the star, you know the size of the planet, the radius of the planet. The time it takes to cross the star's disk gives you some measure about how fast its orbit is around the star. And then the time between successive crossings gives you a measure of the length of the year of that world, which tells you how close it is to the star, and from that you know the temperature of the planet. So we wring everything we can out of those little dips.
How did they use this data to find all these planets, these 700 new ones?
Well, the Kepler has about 3,000 or so planetary candidates. That is, single dips, let's say, in the data that they couldn't verify as actual planets because they only happened once. In order to verify that it's a planet, it has to happen more than once so that you get an orbital period, so that you know it's not some background star that did something funny or that the telescope did something funny. The way they were able to increase the number so quickly was they recognized something very simple, and that is, you've heard the quote, two is company, three is a crowd. Mm-hmm. It keeps on going, four is a party. If you see more than one dip at a time, let's say you see a dip and then another dip, and then you wait a little while and you see two more dips, but they're not evenly spaced, the chances are that that's two planets around the star. And if you see three separate dips with patterns that are repeating at different rates, then the chances are that's three planets. You don't need to go through all the extensive work to see if there's a background star or anything like that, because the chance of seeing more than one dip from two different planets is vanishingly small. And once we realized that, once we saw that the way the statistics work, and by we, I mean Jack Lissauer, who is the head of one of those papers, and Jason Rowe, the head of the other, once we realized that these multiple planet systems couldn't be astrophysical false positives or instrumentation problems, then we could go back to the data, look for these multis, and say, planet, 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 without worrying about making any mistakes.
Mm-hmm. So the big question, because this is the main mission of Kepler, any mm-hmm. potentially Earth-like planets out there?
Well, how close to Earth do you want? A lot of people are hoping to find an Earth's twin. I don't know how many Ben Kiefer twins there are out there, but they're going to be really hard to find. But there are a lot of people that are somewhat like you. And so we have found a whole lot of planets that are somewhat like the Earth. Maybe not an Earth twin, but still planets that could harbor life as we know it, with years comparable to the length of our year, with gravities on the planets comparable to the gravity of the Earth, so creatures would be about the same size as on the Earth, and so on.
Mm-hmm. So what makes, in terms of things that you can measure from this great distance, mm-hmm. and we're talking about a huge distance, what is the light-year difference distance?
The typical stars that we're finding with planets around them are a few hundred light-years away.
A few hundred light-years away.
Light-years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what are the characteristics you're looking to measure potentially Earth-like planets? Distance mm-hmm. from the star that they're circling?
That's right. If they're too close to the star, it's going to be too hot. If they're too far away from the star, they're going to be too cool. And the sort of temperature that we're looking for is the temperature of the Earth, a temperature where liquid water can exist on the surface of the planet without it permanently being frozen or permanently being boiled away into the steam of the atmosphere. And so that's the key thing. We want the planet to be the right distance from the star. The second thing we want is the planet not to be too big, because if it's too massive, too large, then it will have a very thick and heavy atmosphere, and the solid surface will be embedded deep within that. If it's too low mass, then it can't hold an atmosphere at all, and we'd like to think that life on Earth depends on the atmosphere, and that other planets that might host life should probably have atmospheres as well.
Kepler is seeking out potentially habitable planets. What about the next leap? There is no way at this distance to tell if they're inhabited, is there?
Well, there's no easy way. It's going to take a lot more work to tell whether or not these planets have life on them. And in fact, the ones that Kepler are finding are going to be some of the most difficult. New missions that are coming up, TESS, which is a mission that will launch in 2017, will look for planets around brighter stars. Kepler has trouble looking at bright stars, but TESS will be able to do that. If you find a planet around a bright star, then you can use a telescope on the ground or in space to look for the change in the light from the star, from the atmosphere of the planet and the ring around the planet itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Go ahead.
Yeah, but of course, then we're looking at light that is several hundred years old. So if we're, I'm just trying to do the reverse. If somebody mm-hmm. on one of these planets were looking at our planet,
they would get very excited because they would have detected biosignatures in our atmosphere even before we had technology.
Biosignatures. What are those?
Biomarkers are things like oxygen. Our atmosphere is 20-something percent oxygen. That oxygen is a very volatile thing. If it was in an atmosphere around a dead world with no biology, that oxygen would almost instantly be gobbled up by iron-rich minerals or the water on the planet. The oxygen is continually replenished by trees, photosynthesis, and so you need biological activity for oxygen to exist in any abundance in an atmosphere. And so if they had the tools that we had and looked at our Earth, they could tell that life was on our Earth, even though they wouldn't be looking at an Earth with a technological civilization on it.
And they couldn't know what type of life, just that there was life.
Yep, they could tell that there was photosynthetic life.
Mm. Where is Kepler? Yep.
Somebody has to eat all those plants, right?
Where is Kepler now?
Kepler is something like 35 million miles away from the Earth, drifting slowly away. It's in an orbit around the sun, not the Earth, so that's not a bad thing. We meant for it to be doing that. but it orbits the sun in 370 days. So every year it falls behind the Earth another 5 days. And so it's 20 days behind the Earth's orbit right now. We know exactly where it is. So.
Mm-hmm. And its pointing system is still gone awry. Is it still transmitting some useful data?
In fact, it is. We are still using the telescope to look for planets. There is a whole new mission that we're testing right now called the K2 mission, for short. Even though it can't point perfectly, it can point well enough, but not at the original place that it was pointing, and use the pressure of sunlight to help keep it stable. And so we've been able to use Kepler and point it at one field in the sky for almost 3 months, and it's still getting data. And the optics, the instrumentation is all just fine. The pointing requires a little bit of a soft touch from the engineers, but it's demonstrating that it can still work and still produce data. The next step in the K2 mission is trying to get approval from NASA to operate it like this for the next 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So Kepler is still getting data.
So in less than 20 years, we've gone from one planet recognized to 1,700 outside of our galaxy, outside of our solar system. What's your prediction for the next decade?
We live in a very special time right now. I think that this past decade is not going to be repeated in the future. We've changed the paradigm. We now look up at the night sky and we think that pretty much every star that you look at has planets around it. That realization came with this massive explosion in the number of planets. What will be most exciting in the next 10 to 20 years is the discovery of planets that we can actually characterize, as you brought up before, where we can actually measure the composition of the atmosphere and look for these biomarkers, biosignatures, to try and find life or the signature of life on those other worlds. And that should happen, my guess would be, within 10 years, either from the ground or from space, we'll have evidence for atmospheres of planets that have been altered by the life on their surfaces.
Astrophysicist Steve Kowalor of Iowa State University, thanks again for giving us an update on Kepler.
Well, thank you very much for having me.